I think it is time to start. And what I'll do, let me begin first by very quickly reviewing what we did last time. I guess for those who weren't here, the review will be too quick, and for those who were here, hopefully it won't be that imposing. Last time we looked at the sugya in Psachim, the sugya that concerns the daytime period. And we mentioned that the word day has both, and the word yom means both daytime versus nighttime, as well as day of the week. And the sugya in Psachim essentially considers what is the daytime period, and the conclusion of the sugya is that the daytime, without any real dispute, is from Alot HaShachar, which is some amount of time before sunrise, until equivalent amount of time after sunset, a term that the Vilna Gaon chose, the term Tseis Kol HaKochavim, the time when all the stars are visible, meaning that when Alot HaShachar, the very first light of day begins, and as soon as light from the sun begins to illuminate the sky, the visibility of stars begins to go down. So equivalently, in the evening, Tseis Kol HaKochavim in the Gaon's term is the point when all of the light from the sun has completely gone, is completely over. It's not just sunset, but it's well past sunset. And those are the equivalent points that delineate the period, the daytime period. And working through the sugya, there were really two fundamental opinions as to when that is. One opinion was 72 minutes, or four times the time to walk a mil of 18 minutes. The other opinion was 90 minutes, four times the time to walk a mil, where the time to walk a mil was 22 and a half minutes. So we had those two options for Alot HaShachar and Tseis Kol HaKochavim. And related to those two options, there happened to be two very technical options for how long does it take to walk a mil being something between a kilometer and a mile. And then there was a third shita, which probably from our text of the Gemara would appear to have been rejected completely, but it's the shita that many hold that the Rambam concludes with, which is the time to walk a mil of 24 minutes. That's the Gemara in Psachim. It is largely a Gemara about the rabbi's views of astronomy, with the one very practical consequence is that it gives us the only source in the Talmud for a very precise time for Alot HaShachar, and as all the Rishonim explain, and is clear from the Gemara, that's Alot HaShachar in the Middle East around a 12-hour day, so around the spring and fall equinox. So that was the sugya in Psachim. Then we turn to the sugya in Shabbos, which concerns the other definition of the word yom, day of the week, and that sugya consists primarily of a brisa between Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Nechemya. And what they're arguing about is not when the day begins or ends. I mentioned that according to the vast majority of Rishonim, probably well in excess of 95% of Rishonim, there is really no disagreement when the day ends. The day ends within a period of disagreement between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, measured between 24 and 36 seconds. So in an ancient era without atomic clocks, there really is no machlokas in the Gemara about the end of the day. The end of the day, the term the Mishnah uses, is chashecha, darkness. Many of us refer to it as the appearance of stars. But what the sugya, what the brisa between Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Nechemiah is about is before the period of chashecha, the existence of a period of Bein HaShemashos, effectively a period between sunset and this point of chashecha, and the argument between the Tanoim concerns Bein HaShemashos. And the sugya in Shabbos, paskins like Rabbi Yehuda, that there is a period of Bein HaShemashos, and Rabbi Yehuda's period of Bein HaShemashos is longer than Rabbi Nechemia's, who we won't discuss at all, and Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that there is no Bein HaShemashos. Bein HaShemashos is keharef ayin, like the blink of an eye. A day comes in, the other day goes out. Bein HaShemashos effectively is subsumed in whatever sveikos you have relative to chashecha. And that was, so what we were going to analyze, and was the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda says the following, and his opinion, his view is disputed among two Amoraim, Rabba and Reb Yosef, as to exactly what he means, and we read the Brisa according to those two points of view. So, briefly reviewing, Rabbi Yehuda says, Mishatishka Achama, at some point after the sun has set, not clear at all when that point is, all we know about that point is it's adjacent to a point where Pnei Mizrach Ma'adimim, where the amount of light that the sun setting in the west, casts into the east, is really reducing. At the end of that period, when really the light from the west, its impact on the east, has really subsided, so it's beginning, you kind of feel that the sun is no longer having a major impact on the eastern half of the sky. That's Rabbi Yosef's point when Ben Hashmashos begins. Rabba begins Ben Hashmashos, depending on some technical issues, a minute and a half or 2 minutes earlier. So we have Mishatishka Achama, we're not clear when it is. We have this point described, Pnei Mizrach Ma'adimim, and we have a Machlokas, Rabba and Rabbi Yosef, if Ben Hashmashos begins at the end, at that point, or a minute and a half or 2 minutes earlier. Then the Gemara describes what does it look like during Ben Hashmashos. During Ben Hashmashos, the Gemara says that the horizon, Yichsif HaTachtel, the bottom, meaning the eastern horizon, is beginning to get dark. But as you look from the eastern horizon towards the apex of the sky, the apex of the sky is still reflecting some amount of light from the sun that has gone well below the horizon, but is still impacting things at the northern part at the apex of the sky. And then when the apex of the sky, Yichsif HaElyon, when the apex of the sky gets as dark, and Hishvel HaTachton, and is equivalent in darkness to the eastern horizon, that's the definition of Chashecha, darkness, the day transitions from one day to the next. And that's what we discussed last time. And we stopped by the statement at the end of the sugya. The sugya goes on for about a blot, and at the very end of the sugya, there's a statement of Shmuel, one of the most enigmatic statements, and probably perhaps the most important statement in the sugya, relative to helping us understand exactly when Ben Hashmashos is. Shmuel, who I mentioned last time, is known as the Amora with an incredible knowledge of astronomy. He's Baki Bishvili Derakia. And here is his statement, probably the most important statement, halachic statement, astronomical statement, that Shmuel makes in the Talmud. So you have to assume that this statement is instructive, it's informative, it's enlightening, it's non-trivial. So we want to make sure, as we understand the statement, what it could possibly mean, again, subject to the assumption that you have to assume that this is not a Shmuel is not giving us some triviality. At the end of a blot and a half discussing Ben Hashmashos, Shmuel sums it up by saying, Kochav Echad Yom, one star day, Shnei Kochavim Ben Hashmashos, two stars Ben Hashmashos, Shlosha Kochavim Laila, three stars night. Now, if someone, I see there are some folks on from Israel, so they can test this out tomorrow night, and maybe they can come back next week and tell us whether this is accurate. If you were to go out tomorrow night, it's the early part of Kislev, and you were to go and look for stars, and you were to sort of say, Shnei Kochavim Ben Hashmashos. Shmuel says, Shnei Kochavim Ben Hashmashos, two stars equals Ben Hashmashos, and you were to come back and report to us when you first see two stars. And I'm going to even let you use a telescope. I'm going to let you, ask somebody who's expert in astronomy where to look. I'll let you do whatever you'd like to do. Chances are you're going to come back and tell us that you could not see two stars before about 20 minutes after sunset. So the question is, Chashecha is tomorrow approximately at most 25 minutes after sunset. So if we just got through saying that the period of Ben Hashmashos is probably 13 and a half to 17 minutes long, then it's clear that when Shmuel says Shnei Kochavim Bein HaShemashos, he's not defining Bein HaShemashos. He must be telling us something else about Bein HaShemashos, because in fact, tomorrow night in Israel, you will not be able to see two stars until pretty close to 20 minutes after sunset. Now, furthermore, Shmuel says, Kochav Echad Yom, that one star equals day. And I can assure you, similarly, tomorrow night, if you go out in Israel, start looking for a star, you will not see a star until maybe 18 or 19 minutes after sunset. So Shmuel, when he says one star day, two stars Bein HaShemashos, three stars night, it's very, very interesting. He is not stating something obvious. He must be stating something a little more, a little more elegant than simply telling us when Bein HaShemashos starts, because clearly the appearance of stars, the first star and the second star, is largely uncorrelated to the rest of the sugya. The rest of the sugya told us, Bnei Mizrach Ma'adimim, we learned from Rabba and Reb Yosef how long Bein HaShemashos are. So we learned two ways of estimating the beginning of Bein HaShemashos, and Shmuel, Kochav Echad Yom, Shnei Kochavim Bein HaShemashos, does not correlate to anything we learned previously in the sugya. So the question is, what does Shmuel mean? So I would suspect that Shmuel means the following, and it's the only explanation that I've been able to find that's astronomically correct and is also halachically correct. So, and it's also very insightful. So, halachically correct, astronomically correct, and insightful, by process of elimination, this is probably what Shmuel meant. And what he was saying was the following. Shnei Kochavim Bein HaShemashos means that if you're in Eretz Yisrael, any time during the year, and you're looking up, and you see two stars, Shmuel is telling you, regardless of how early you might think it is, Shnei Kochavim, act as if it is already Bein HaShemashos. Stop what you're doing, put things down, it is already Bein HaShemashos. So, Shlosha Kochavim Laila, sure, three stars, when you see three stars, you'll know that Chashecha has passed, but as soon as you see two stars, you must stop working because it's already Bein HaShemashos. And that's what Shmuel is saying. He's not saying that two stars define the beginning of Bein HaShemashos. Shmuel is telling you that when and if you see two stars, realize that Bein HaShemashos has already started. Not necessarily that Bein HaShemashos doesn't start before you see two stars, but when you see two stars, Bein HaShemashos will start. On the other hand, Shmuel is saying, Kochav Echad Yom, if you see a star, you don't be certain that it's Bein HaShemashos. That a single star can appear in Eretz Yisrael even before the beginning of Bein HaShemashos. So Shmuel is telling you, based on his observation, that it is occasionally possible to see a star in Eretz Yisrael before Bein HaShemashos. On the other hand, if you see two stars, you have to assume that it is already Bein HaShemashos, and of course three stars are night. What is Shmuel talking about? Well, it turns out that the first star that's visible in Israel, in the Middle East, visible mostly in the spring towards the summer, is the star Sirius. And Sirius is visible approximately, depending on what it means to be visible, how good your eyesight is, do you know exactly where to look, or do you have a telescope? But basically, under the most ideal situations, with an absolute expert training his eye on the right part of the sky, Sirius is visible about 6 or 7 minutes after sunset. And what Shmuel is saying, that the appearance of Sirius occurs before Bein HaShemashos. I had thought of this a while ago, and surprisingly, I found this exact statement by Reb Chaim Volozhin. And he did not make reference to Sirius. But Reb Chaim Volozhin makes reference to the fact that Bein HaShemashos starts later than 6 minutes, and he quotes Shmuel, Kochav Echad Yom. So I suspect that is the correct interpretation of Kochav Echad Yom. Then Shmuel says, in the spring, when Sirius is visible early, there's a second star. It happens to be the star Canopus, Those two stars tend to be visible, again, to an expert who can train his eye exactly where to look, approximately 14 or 15 minutes after sunset. So Shmuel is now giving us another relatively accurate assessment of when Bein HaShemashot starts. It starts somewhere after 6 or 7 minutes, somewhere before 14 minutes. And this is the opinion of a number of poskim, not by any stretch of the imagination, a majority of poskim. Most poskim in the modern era do not subscribe to a view that Bein HaShemashot starts some number of minutes after sunset. Most poskim in the modern day subscribe to the view that Bein HaShemashot starts exactly at sunset. And there is a very large body of literature, starting from the times of the Gaonim, that would imply that. The issue has always been, did they mean that, strictly speaking, lahalacha? In other words, did they mean that Bein HaShemashot lahalacha starts at sunset, according to Rabbah? Rabbah has the longest period of Bein HaShemashot in the sugya, so if anybody starts at sunset, it would have to be Rabbah. Or does it mean no? They're just telling you that, given the chumrah of Shabbos, and given the fact that people for thousands of years did not have atomic clocks, and they did not have sunset reported accurately, and they had cloudy days, and they had everything else, that Chazal were telling us how to behave. That is kind of my point of view. I think that most of the early sources that tend to talk about sunset are not necessarily talking in trying to interpret the words of the Gemara to mean something different than what I described. What they're really saying is that sunset is really the point at which we ought to begin Bein HaShemashot, because Bein HaShemashot nonetheless is going to approximately start roughly 10 minutes later if we were to use a single number. So instead of waiting 10 minutes and entering a period of doubt and getting delayed and whatever, start Bein HaShemashot at sunset. In fact, the Rambam's language, when he talks about Bein HaShemashot, he uses the term from sunset, from Shkia, until Tzeisa Kochavim. The Rambam uses the term Hu HaNikra Bein HaShemashot. And the word Nikra is a significant amount of disagreement as to why he did not mean that was the interval of Bein HaShemashot. So the question has always been, did he mean three stars is later than the end of Bein HaShemashot? Something I certainly subscribe to. Three stars comes after the point of Chashecha. Or did he mean that sunset is before the beginning of Bein HaShemashot, one or the other? I suspect he meant both. But that's a long conversation. The issue in the modern day is people who are really trying very hard to insist that sunset is not just the Ahar Chaka or an Eitzah Tova or a Minhag or whatever, but it's actually Meikar Hadin, they have to contend with the sugya, and they have to somehow deal with the fact that the sugya seems in any number of ways. If you look at the second module in this year, I have a relatively long list of implications from the sugya, and there actually are quite a few more, that would imply that the sugya does not mean sunset proper, but it means some number of time after sunset. In the interest of time, I'm not going to go through this at great length. I'll just mention the two things that are most troubling for those who believe that sunset in the sugya means sunset mamish as the beginning of Bein HaShemashot. The most troubling thing is if the length of Bein HaShemashot maximally is the time to walk 3/4 of a mil, then if sunset, Bein HaShemashot starts at sunset, that means that Chashecha is 3/4 of a mil later, which means Shabbos is over. If you hold a mil, time to walk a mil is 18 minutes, is 13 and a half minutes. At best, Shabbos is over 16 and whatever, almost 17 minutes. And the problem with that is that if you go out to see stars with a telescope in the Judean desert, trained astronomer, trained somebody who knows exactly where to look, you will never see three stars within 13 and a half minutes of sunset. It is absolutely impossible. And in fact, if you don't look for stars, if you look for the primary criteria in the Gemara, Hichsif Elyon V'Hishva L'Tachton, which is what the Brisa talks in terms of, you will not see, under any circumstance, a situation where somebody would argue that the apex of the sky is as dark as the eastern horizon until close to 20 minutes. So one major challenge to the sunset point of view is the end of Bein HaShemashos is way too early. The second challenge is Shmuel, because Shmuel clearly says a medium star, I will argue Sirius, but that's not critical, a medium star visible after sunset is visible during the day. So that would effectively say that Bein HaShemashos cannot possibly start at sunset if Shmuel is correct. And again, Shmuel is uncontested, quoted by the Rif, quoted by all Rishonim. So if Shmuel is correct, then sunset can't be sunset proper. Now, there are a variety of ways to try to effectively change Shmuel's statement to comport with sunset. And all of them are relatively difficult. People try to align Shmuel with Rabbi Yosef and not Rabbah. Rabbi Yosef starts Bein HaShemashos a minute and a half or 2 minutes after sunset, so maybe the star appears between a sunset and a minute and a half. The problem is that Sirius doesn't appear until 6 minutes, so that doesn't work. Some people try to argue that Shmuel is not talking about medium stars, even though the sugya seems to say pretty clearly he is. He's talking about large stars, which would make Shmuel's statement less than necessary. Shmuel would be saying that a large star, i.e. a planet, that's what the Gemara refers to as a large star, visible before Shkia, before sunset, is visible before Bein HaShemashos. That's probably somewhat unnecessary. It certainly would not be the, you know, sort of a very instructive, intuitive, intelligent statement. It would be sort of, you'd be nonplussed if somebody told you that Bein HaShemashos does not start before sunset. That would not be the most informative statement. The third alternative is the attempt to align Shmuel with Rabbi Yossi, and that's probably the most popular one. The difficulty with that is that Shmuel talks in terms of Bein HaShemashos, and it would appear, again, also from the interarrival rate of stars and a variety of other factors, that Shmuel is dealing with the real interval of Bein HaShemashos, and Rabbi Yossi considers Bein HaShemashos Keharafayin. Besides which, after the Gemara paskins like Rabbi Yehuda, it brings the statement of Shmuel, and it's highly unlikely that after all of that, Shmuel is stating his point of view according to Rabbi Yossi, who we do not paskin like relative to Bein HaShemashos. So anyway, that's the Gaonim, that's the point of view of the Gaonim, that's the prevalent point of view that we follow today, with the obvious caveat that halachically, all of us start Shabbos at Bein HaShemashos. And my only point is that there is room for poskim in other situations, or in situations of any sort of need, there is more flexibility that exists around sunset than many believe. In fact, if over in you go back a century ago in Eretz Yisrael, where I think again the Minhagim have certain, especially in this area, have a lot of credence because the poskim in Eretz Yisrael, Midari Daros, never had to deal with the science of latitude and season. As we'll get to, as you move north of Eretz Yisrael, a lot of things begin to change. So you have to worry whether the changes that were made are consistent with practice in Eretz Yisrael, or were the changes to Machmir, to Mekil, and we'll see both examples of that. But in Eretz Yisrael, the minhag of poskim who came from Lita, specifically Shmuel Salant, the Aderes, Reb Leib Diskin, all of them performed the bris on a baby born a few minutes after sunset on the prior day. So in all of them, and in fact, I don't remember who, I think it was Reb Shmuel Salant said that if you don't hear the Mugrab, The Mugrab is the Arab Gabai. He calls for the fourth tefillah, and I think there's a machlokas ayatollah, whether that's 7 minutes or 10 minutes after Shkia. But the Mugrab does not call earlier than 7 minutes. I think he normally calls 10 minutes after Shkia. And Rav Shmuel Salam used to paskin that until you hear the Mugrab, which is very important, you're living in an Arab town, you would hear him everywhere. So if the baby is born before you hear the call of the Mugrab, you can rely on that to have a bris on the preceding day. So that was an opinion. Again, in the modern day, I think we've gotten a little bit more machmir relative to sunset proper. But now, okay, so this is the Gaonim. Now we're going to turn to Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam is now living in the north of France, and he's now looking at the same sukkah. And the question is, you're living in France, you have the same words that we have, the words in the sukkah, he now has to correlate what he is observing in France with the words in the sukkah. Now, I don't want to get into, you know, did he understand the science? Did he know how far north of Eretz Yisrael he was? Did he understand variation by season, which increases at more northern latitudes? Did he understand the impact of latitude? You can conjecture about all of that, but that's really not that critical at this point. First question is, Rabbeinu Tam opens the Gemara, and he's looking outside, and he reads the sukkah, and assuming for a moment that he wanted to read the sukkah as similarly as we just did. In other words, he's going to read the sukkah exactly as we read the sukkah, but he's now going to have to modify the times involved to correlate to what he's observing in France. Now, I'm doing this because I do believe that other poskim, not the Rabbeinu Tam, ended up using that sort of a methodology in paskening halacha. Rabbeinu Tam didn't, as we'll see. But assume that the Rabbeinu Tam is sitting in northern France, and he reads the sugi, Mishatishka Achama, okay, the sun is set, fine, it's now after sunset, and he's waiting for Pnei Mizrach Madin. He's waiting for the light from the west to begin to have diminished impact in the east, really diminished impact. So let's assume for argument's sake in Eretz Yisrael, this happens, I'm not trying to force an issue, say 10 minutes after sunset. So assume Rabbeinu Tam has the same point of view, but now Rabbeinu Tam is trying to observe when is that really happening in France. And assuming that he had the identical view, and he was looking for the same thing that a posek in Eretz Yisrael said happens at 10 minutes, then roughly Rabbeinu Tam would see the same impact in the sky about 5 minutes later because of his more northern latitude. Okay, so 10 minutes became 15 minutes. Then, at the end of the Chashecha happens when the apex of the sky equals, in darkness, the eastern horizon. And let's say, for argument's sake, that happens in Eretz Yisrael 25 minutes after sunset. So, in Eretz Yisrael, the beginning of Ben HaShemashos is around 10 minutes after sunset. The end of Ben HaShemashos is about 25 minutes after sunset. Obviously, you have to adjust these numbers to be precise. They're not. So now the question is, Rabbeinu Tam, sitting in France, he wouldn't see anything in 25 minutes. When would he see the equivalent to what somebody in Eretz Yisrael saw in 25 minutes? When would he see in France, Hichsif Ha'alyon V'Yishvil HaTachton? When would he see the apex of the sky in France equal to, in darkness, the eastern horizon? And that would happen roughly about 45 minutes. It's very seasonal dependent. But I just want to make a point. So say it's roughly 45 minutes after sunset. So in Eretz Yisrael, the period of Ben HaShemashos was about 15 minutes. In France, Rabbeinu Tam, were he even to interpret the sugya exactly the way the Gaonim interpreted the sugya, he would have come up with the period of Ben HaShemashos of roughly a half hour. He would have said, Pnei Mizrach Madimim, about 15 minutes after, the end of Shabbos about 45 minutes after. Okay, but unfortunately or fortunately, Rabbeinu Tam didn't do that. Rabbeinu Tam looked at the sugya and looked at the sugya in Pesachim, and he basically looked at the two numbers in the sugya. He looked in the sugya in Pesachim, where the sugya concluded that the interval between Tseis HaKochavim and sunset is 4 mil, the time to walk 4 mil, and the interval between sunset and chashecha, which now Shmuel equated to three stars, is at most 3/4 of a mil. So Rabbeinu Tam said, well, what's going on? Everybody here is talking and interpreting the Tana Rabbi Yehuda. How could 3/4 of a mil and 4 mil both be true at the same time? So Rabbi Tam basically said, ah, I have an idea. Three stars. Now, first, let me add one fact. Rabbi Tam knew from a variety of sugyas discussed in great length in Yerushalmi and Brachas that when Chazal normally used the term Seisa Kochavim, in Shas, not in Psachim. In Psachim, it was a science sugya. So it was not the normal use of Tzeisa Kochavim, as the Gra very, very proves, very, you know, at least in my opinion, the Gra's proof is unassailable. But Rabbeinu Tam didn't agree. So Rabbeinu Tam said, I see Tzeisa Kochavim in Psachim. I see three stars in Shabbos. Generally in Shas, I know that three stars equals Tzeisa Kochavim. Ah, so now I know what's going on. The end of the sugya in Shabbos equals the end of the sugya in Psachim. So when is Shabbos over? 4 million after sunset. So let's not get into our machlokas, whether it's 72 minutes or 90 minutes. Let's just say 72 to make it a little bit easier. So 72 minutes after sunset, Rabbeinu Tam says, that's when Shabbos is over. So what about 3/4 of a mil? So Rabbeinu Tam says it's easy. The sun sets, and if you look to the west in France, you're going to see the sun. You're not going to see the sun disappear. In fact, in France, the sun really doesn't disappear for well over an hour. You can tell that the sun is still there an hour after sunset by really gazing at the western horizon. So Rabbeinu Tam says, when the sun really, really, really goes down, he calls that Shkia Shnia, the second Shkia. That's the beginning of Vein HaShemashos. And that happens 3/4 mil after sunset. So sunset, say 6 o'clock, 7:12, 72 minutes later, Shabbos is over. At 6:58.5, that's the beginning of Vein HaShemashos. Until 6:58.5, it's day. And according to Rabbeinu Tam, this is the way the Shulchan Aruch Paskin, it's day, you can drive your car, you can light a match, you can do whatever you'd like to do. Shabbos, Bein HaShemashos, only begins 58 minutes after sunset. In fact, the Ramban goes further. The Ramban says, Tosefa Shabbos, you want to add on to Shabbos? You can't add on to Shabbos before sunset. Because what's the point? The sun hasn't set yet. So to the Ramban, until you get to sunset, you can't even get to Tosefet Shabbos, barely. So basically, that's the Shita, that is the famous Shita of the Rabbeinu Tam. Now, the Shita of the Rabbeinu Tam was the prevalent Shita, certainly in Europe, from the time of the Rabbeinu Tam until sometime in the 18th century. In the 18th century, starting, I think the first city that went in the direction of the Gaonim in Europe was Frankfurt. But the real objection to the Rabbeinu Tam, the most famous objection to the Rabbeinu Tam, came at the end of the 18th century, where both the Baal HaTanya, in his Siddur, Shnei Zalman Liliadi, and the Vilner Gaon, attacked the Rabbeinu Tam violently. I don't know if there's a stronger word. They basically said that Rabbeinu Tam was incorrect. The Gra attacked the Rabbeinu Tam largely based on logic and science. If you read the Gra, the Gra is in a number of places in Shulchan Aruch, the beginning of Hilchos Shabbos, in Pesach, where the discussion of the length of a meal is, in Hilchos Milah, in a number of places, the Gra goes into a long arichas attacking the Rabbeinu Tam, basically saying to the Rabbeinu Tam that he's making a huge mistake. The reason that he was confused, basically, was because in his more northern latitude, things take a lot longer to happen after sunset than they happen in Eretz Yisrael. And the Gra goes through a whole sequence of arguments that basically says that we have to start Shabbos not like the Rabbeinu Tam, Paskin to the Shulchan Aruch, we have to start Shabbos early. The Baal HaTanya, interestingly, very few arguments involving the Baal HaTanya based on science. The Baal HaTanya's arguments are entirely observational. They're very, very accurate. It's very, very different style. The Gra is really mostly logic and science. The Baal HaTanya probably had a much more extensive library. He quotes the Gaonim. He quotes Rishonim from the Middle East, Maram al-Shakar, people who argued with Rabbeinu Tam. And again, the Baal HaTanya very strongly refers to people who do not start Shabbos as late as the Rabbeinu Tam as being over in Yisur D'Oraisa. So you're not talking about, you know, the Gra and the Rabbeinu Tam, the Gra and the Baal HaTanya saying this is a standard machlokas haposkim. They are violently in opposition to the position of Rabbeinu Tam. So much so, I would argue that perhaps, if you look in the Gra is one who very strongly writes about starting Shabbos at sunset. And I've always been amused by the fact that his major Talmud, Reb Chaim Volozhin, very carefully says to start Shabbos starts Mikra Din more than 6 minutes. And I suspect, you know, and again, this is just pure conjecture, that the Gra did not want to get, you know, he didn't want to get fancy. He saw all of Klal Yisrael violating Bein HaShemashos for sure, and some number of people, I don't think Gehillot, I think most Gehillot did not wait the full time of the Rabbeinu Tam. It's a separate conversation. But certainly individuals were being Mechal Shabbos D'Oraisa. Most Gehillot were starting Shabbos about a half hour after sunset. So we can argue about whether that is or is not in or outside of Bein HaShemashos. That's a separate conversation. But the Gra clearly wanted to distance people from the opinion of the Rabbeinu Tam, and he basically said sunset. The Baal HaTanya actually happened to say 4 minutes after sunset, which was similar to the psak of certain Sephardi rabbis in the Middle East. Again, I do not know where he acquired that information. I suspect he had a very extensive library. And the Reb Chaim Volozhin says 6 minutes. In the modern day, out of curiosity, perhaps one of the people most famous as a machmir, the Chazon Ish did not wait 72 minutes in Israel. The Chazon Ish ended Shabbos approximately 45 minutes after sunset. Of course, he had chumras on the zmanim that people kept in Eretz Yisrael, which typically, because of the chumra of the Shabbos, typically were between 36 and 42 minutes. The Chazon Ish added a few minutes to that. But even the Chazon Ish, Rabbi Michal Tukhachinsky, who was probably the greatest gadol in the study of zmanim, and frankly, anyone who studies zmanim, certainly myself, in the modern day, owes an incredible debt to Rabbi Michal Tukhachinsky, who most of the observations and the correlation between the observations and the science are in a sefer he wrote in the 1940s called Bein HaShemashos. He also completely rejected the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. So there are rejections. There are people who basically will argue that you are not allowed to rely on the sheet of the Rabbeinu Tam. The Rabbeinu Tam is incorrect. Now, why is it incorrect? There's two things wrong with Rabbeinu Tam from the point of view of the rejections. One thing wrong is that Hashecha, the point at which the day ends, and Alot HaShachar are not equal distant from sunrise and sunset, respectively. Alot HaShachar is way before sunrise, 72 minutes or more in the Middle East around the equinox, and Hashecha is maybe 25 or 30 minutes, 20 minutes, some much, much less than half. So the most fundamental problem with Rabbeinu Tam, and this is really where the Gaon spends most of his energy, is that you can't equate two things that are not equal. Or, to be very specific, three stars does not equal all the stars. So all the stars are visible at Alot HaShachar, and all the stars will disappear at the equivalent point in the evening. So the first challenge to the Rabbeinu Tam is this equating of Chashecha with Alot HaShachar. Three stars, yes, in Kol HaTorah Kula, that's what Seis HaKochavim means, but in the Sugya, Im Sochim, Seis HaKochavim is the equivalent to Alot HaShachar. That's problem number one. Problem number two with Rabbeinu Tam is try to read the Sugya according to the Rabbeinu Tam. Now again, forget about how Rabbeinu Tam read the Sugya, thinking whatever he thought about what he observed in France versus what was being observed in Eretz Yisrael. The truth is, you have to read the Sugya. At the end of the day, the Sugya is not about France. It's not about Lithuania. It's not about America. The Sugya is about the Middle East, about Bavel. So the question is, can you read the Sugya according to the Rabbeinu Tam? In other words, we read the whole Sugya, Mishitishka Achamon, Pidei Mizrach Nadimim, Yichzeve Elyam, Yeshua Tachtan, Shmuel, the whole Sugya. We read the entire Sugya with the assumption that everything was going on in the east, the sun was setting in the west, and we were watching the impact of the setting sun in the east. So when people, over the period of a large number of years, not everybody rejected the Rabbeinu Tam. So a lot of people worked at the issue of trying to reconcile the Sugya with the Rabbeinu Tam. And what they came up with, whether you believe their explanations of the text or not, they are certainly inventive. The fundamental approach, what they did, is they basically turned the Sugya the other direction. They said, don't look to the east. Look only to the west. Now let's see if you can read the Sugya looking to the west. So, all right, Mishitishka Achama, some point after sunset, an hour, maybe it's an, I would have thought Mishitishka means a few minutes, but all right, it means an hour. Kozman Shepnei Mizrach Ma'adimim, Pnei Mizrach means the west. So that makes some sense. Pnei Mizrach is the thing that's facing the east, that's the west. So all right, there's some illumination from the sun, perhaps an hour after sunset. So that part so far is okay. Then the Gemara says, when is Chashecha? Hichsif ha'elyon, v'hishmel ha'tachta. The apex equals the horizon. Wait a second, think about it. If this is referring to the western sky, in the western sky, what darkens first? The apex or the horizon? The last thing to darken, the very last piece of darkness, comes from the western horizon. So the Gemara, hichsif ha'elyon, v'hishmel ha'tachton, is exactly backwards. It should say, hichsif ha'tachton, v'hishmel ha'elyon. So the Gemara apparently cannot be talking about the western horizon. So the invention, which is just, in my mind, sheer brilliance, is that the hichsif ha'elyon is not referring to the sky at all. It's referring to the ball of the sun. So what it's saying is as follows. The ball of the sun descends below the horizon. The bottom of the ball effectively stops giving light, and the light that we're seeing is from the Elyon, from the top of the ball. So when is it totally dark? When Hichsif Elyon, when the top of the ball stops giving illumination, just like the bottom of the ball had stopped giving illumination earlier. So that's a very, very, I would say, cute, brilliant, I don't know if that would qualify as pshat, but that's the way the Sugya was read in order to affect, the Brisa was read, in order to accommodate the position of the Rabbeinu Tam. Then you have the other issue. You have the issue of what about Shmuel? What about, you know, by the time of the Rabbeinu Tam, 72 minutes, again, go out in Eretz Yisrael tomorrow night or any night of the year, 72 minutes after Shkia, the sky is full of stars. There are, you know, I guess because of our modern illumination, you won't see thousands of stars. But if there was no illumination, you would see hundreds of stars 72 minutes after Shkia. So what's to do with that? Well, it turns out that well before you get there, it's Yisrael, the Rav Yoah, living in Germany, was already bothered by the fact that there were too many stars out. So the Rav Yoah says, listen, we're turning the Sugya sideways, we'll turn Shmuel sideways also. So Shmuel is also talking about the stars in the west. So it's not stars anywhere. You have to see three stars very close to the western horizon. In fact, if you say that 72 minutes, then this point of view is possible. Shmuel could mean, if you interpolate into the text of Shmuel, that the three stars and the two stars and the one star are not stars anywhere on the, you know, in the sky, but those are all stars towards the western horizon. That's the other. So those who are trying very, very, very hard to keep the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam reasonable relative to Eretz Yisrael have these interpretations about looking west, the sun as opposed to the sky is what Yichtzif Elyon of Yishvul Atachman is talking about. The stars are stars that appear towards the west. And that's basically how they rehabilitate the position of Rabbeinu Tam. The problem with all of this is it works for the Brisa, it works for Shmuel, but frankly, there's one part of the Gemara where it doesn't work at all. And that is the part that we skipped. There is an intriguing piece of the Gemara where, I won't go into it, but Abaye and Rava, for reasons the Maharam says because it was because he doesn't use the word cloudy, but I suspect he means cloudy. Because of impairment, he says there was impairment in visibility. I assume he meant clouds. Abaye and Rava were looking to the east and to the west. And one or the other was telling the other one, why are you looking to the west? All the simanim are in the east. So of course, if it's Rabbeinu Tam, you'd have to switch the ikadamri around. So they were complaining, why are you looking here? Why are you looking there? The problem with this point of view is, again, we'll ask people in Eretz Yisrael to go out tomorrow night, 58 minutes or 50 minutes or 54 minutes, I don't care, 50 minutes after sunset, and look to the eastern horizon. And what you'll find is nothing is changing. So this Abaye and Rava arguing as to whether they should be looking east or west, in ostensibly because of inclement weather, doesn't really matter if that was, that's the reason the Maharam gives, and it's probably the best interpretation of why they were arguing about which direction to look. The point is, according to Rabbeinu Tam, they're looking 50 minutes after sunset. And if you look at that machlokas and you say, what is somebody in Eretz Yisrael looking at in the east, on the eastern side of the sky 50 minutes after sunset? The answer would be, there's really nothing perceptible to the human eye. I don't even know, I don't know, if you had a machine, if you were measuring, if you'd be able to see any change in the, on the eastern side of the horizon 50 minutes after sunset. So I think that actually is probably the hardest question against Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, so that's Rabbeinu Tam. There are reactions to the Rabbeinu Tam comes in three flavors. And again, the Rabbeinu Tam, the discussion of the Rabbeinu Tam Shita, in addition to those who reject the Rabbeinu Tam, is discussed over probably thousands and thousands of pages, hundreds of different tshuvos. So trying to summarize it in our last 12 minutes is not going to be trivial. But basically, the people who, there are three approaches to dealing with Rabbeinu Tam. The first approach, I kind of label the traditionalists. It is of very wide currency in the modern day. It was not that much of an approach back a few hundred years ago for obvious reasons. People did not have clocks and watches. And the approach of the traditionalist is basically to turn the Rabbeinu Tam into 72 minutes. So they say, all right, the Shulchan Aruch says the time to walk 4 mil. I don't know from science. Don't confuse me about latitude. Don't confuse me about season. I know one thing, and I know one thing only. Alot HaShachar is 72 minutes before sunrise. Chashecha, the end of Shabbos, is 72 minutes after sunset. Leave me alone. That's the way we're going to paskin. Now, the advantage that this has, by the way, is it completely obviates the problem of how Alot HaShachar and the evening's man are the same, because they're foursomes. They make them both time. The problem with this is obvious, right? Time was never meant as the halacha. Time was always meant as an approximation to the halacha. It was no one. It's almost, if you go through Rishonim, there's the argument that stars are defining or Hashecha is defining. It is unheard of among Gaonim and Rishonim to hear anyone suggest that not stars, not darkness, not the appearance of light. Read all of Maseches Tomit that describes the period right following Alot HaShachar until there's not a single word in the entire Masechta around time. So this time fixation, I suspect, is a relatively modern thing. And many, many people, it's a position of many, many rabbis. The thing that it has going for it is it removes the obvious contradiction between why is the evening three stars, not three stars anymore. It correlates to absolutely nothing. It's 72 minutes, so 72 minutes equals 72 minutes. So the problem of how do the two sugyas become equal goes away, because 72 equals 72. The problem this creates, however, is another problem. It's the problem with the Gemara Masechet. 72 minutes before sunrise. Now, for us in New York, the problem is it's true, but it's probably not observable. We could probably argue whether we can see it. In London, 72 minutes before sunrise. In Vilna, 72 minutes before sunrise in the morning is way past Alot HaShachar. In fact, it's way past Mishiyakim. And again, but this 72 minutes, so what it turns out is that 72 minutes, not just does it do violence to the sugya in Shabbos, like we described the problems in reading Rabbi Natan into the sugya in Shabbos, it also begins to really impact the definition of Alot HaShachar, and 72 minutes is just too close to sunrise, certainly at a northern latitude. If you want to just amuse yourself, you'll see the strength of the 72-minute shita. Go to the OU website and type in someday in June in London, and you'll see something amusing. Because the OU also uses the 72-minute version of the Rabbeinu Tam. It's extremely popular. It used to be very popular in Hasidic circles. But in the last 50 or 60 years, it's become very popular in Yeshivot as well. Okay. Then you have the second approach is the conceptualist approach. There are two conceptualist approaches. One is from Rav Soloveitchik, and the other is from Rav David Shapiro. And I'll tell you the Rav's approach and Rav David Shapiro's approach literally in a minute or two each. The Rav basically took the traditionalist approach and he corrected it logically and scientifically, and he reformulated Rabbeinu Tam so there is absolutely no contradiction logical between the sugyas, and there's absolutely no contradiction to the metzias as the Goyim defines it. So what the Rav basically said is the end of Shabbos is not Hashecha as defined in the Gemara in Shabbos. The end of Shabbos is what the Goyim called Seis Kolak Echavim. The Rav used the term from the Sugi and Brachos. He used the term BSR, when all of the light disappears, which again, when all the light disappears, all the stars appear. So basically, what the Rav did with the Gemara in Shabbos is not for a one-minute conversation. But basically, the Rav took the traditional approach. He said that Shabbos ends as late after sunset as Alot HaShachar is before sunrise. But instead of a fixed 72, it's in his Yartzei Shir Yom V'Laila, he made the whole thing basically dependent on the appearance and the disappearance of light. So it's an absolutely brilliant shir. And again, he improved on the Goyim's notion of Seis Kolak Echavim. He found a term in the Gemara that he used as the equivalent. So the Gra, I told you, invented the term Seis Kolak Echavim. The Rav had a term from the Gemara in Brachas, which the more you think about it, you'll see that term captures what the Gra called Seis Kolak Echavim. Perfect. So that's the Rav, and if those of you who know, the Rav waited over 2.5 hours in Boston in the summer because he kept his version of the Rabbeinu Tam. Rav David Shapiro, who we will go over in just a second, He basically, his argument, which is in a sefer called B'nai Tzion, he himself is an incredible individual. He wrote a 600 or 700 page sefer on many, many topics related to time. He was one of the combatants in the machlokas around the date line with the Chazon Ish. He was a Talmud of the Minchas Elazar, for those of you who know who his view on Zionism is, who ended up teaching in Rav Kook's yeshiva. So he is certainly a very interesting person, very, very knowledgeable, obviously in halacha, but also extremely knowledgeable in astronomy. He had an absolutely mind-boggling teretz. His teretz was that the Rabbeinu Tam agrees to the Gaon. Now, what did he do with everything the Rabbeinu Tam wrote? He said, you're not reading it correctly. The Rabbeinu Tam never meant that shkia, the first shkia is sunset, and the second shkia is 58 minutes later. What the Rabbeinu Tam really meant was that the first shkia is 58 minutes before sunset, and shkia shnia is sunset. So he basically aligned the Gaon and the Rabbeinu Tam. There have been a number of people in the 20th century who have tried this type of an approach to basically say that for the last 600 years, the Shulchan Aruch, Klal Yisrael, misinterpreted Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam really didn't mean to say what he said. What he meant to say was something similar to the Gaon. That's the approach of David Shapiro. Again, it's extremely complex, and the obvious problem with Sir David Shapiro was the Gemara Masechet. That's the other conceptualist approach. And in the last 2 minutes, I'll tell you the practical approach. In a certain sense, I don't mean to be disrespectful, chas v'shalom, to the Rav or to Rav Aaron Cutler, who had the traditionalist brother of David Shapiro, but they were known, as you would expect, as great Talmudic scholars. Poskim had to deal with the Rabbeinu Tam. And Poskim, you know, effectively had to Poskim. And most Poskim, starting with the first Posek who ever really understood the impact of latitude, understood all the scientific problems with Rabbeinu Tam, was someone by the name of Avraham Pimentel. He wrote a sefer called Minchas Kohen. He was a contemporary of the Magen Avraham. And starting with him, all the way through Reb Moshe Feinstein, including the Chasam Sofer, a variety of poskim, Reb Pimentel and Reb Moshe specifically, say they are poskening like the Rabbeinu Tam. The Chasam Sofer is a little bit trickier. The Chasam Sofer also says he's poskening Rabbeinu Tam. Reb Moshe says he wants to be machmir like both. But with respect to the end of Shabbos, Reb Moshe says he's pasking like Rabbeinu Tam. So Reb Moshe, Reb Pimentel, Chasam Sofer, they all write that they're going to pasken like Rabbeinu Tam with respect to the end of Shabbos. But how do they pasken? They don't look in the Sefer. They look at what they observe. Reb Moshe says, I see as many stars in New York 50 minutes after sunset, as I saw in Lubin and Vilna, 72 minutes after sunset. The Chasam Sofer ended Shabbat, a very famous tshuva about a baby born at 8:30. Sunset that day was at 8:03. And the Chasam Sofer said that 8:30 is before Ben Hashmashos, because Shabbos, that particular Shabbos was over 8:55. And he subtracted what he subtracted, 17 minutes, and he said 8:38 is the beginning of Ben Hashmashos. We know for a fact the baby was born at 8:30. The baby was born before Ben Hashmashos. So he used a very interesting view of the Rabbeinu Tam. Similarly, Rabbi Rumpimentel said that Ben Hashmashos is between 48 and 66 minutes based on observation in Amsterdam. And Rumpimentel actually was bothered by his psak, he was bothered by the science, he was bothered by things conceptually. But all of these poskim, they all poskim like Rabbeinu Tam, but effectively use the Gemara in Shabbos and use their observation to tell you how to poskim. So in a certain sense, Rabbeinu Tam's equivalence between Alot HaShachar and Tzeis HaKolchavim or Hashecha, despite the fact that conceptually, if you read the Tosfos, there's no denying that Rabbeinu Tam says that those two things are equal. When it came to Psak, read Ramosha's Psak on Alot HaShachar. He makes no reference whatsoever to his Psak on Hashecha on the end of Shabbos. It's as if this he does based on observation in the morning, this he does based on observation in the evening. So effectively, even though Rav Moshe, the Chassam Sofer, Rav Chaim Thiel, all say they're paskening like the Rabbeinu Tam, you will find many, many poskim who say they're paskening like the Rabbeinu Tam are influenced by the reality of the Gemara in Shabbos, and they end up, like Rav Moshe says, Baal Nefesh, it can wait 72 minutes, but Meikra Dedina, in New York, 50 minutes is sufficient. Chassam Sofer, 52 minutes in the summer, in Mattersdorf, is sufficient. Pimentel, 48 minutes in Amsterdam. By the way, the biggest makel of the group is the Chassam Sofer. 52 minutes in Mattersdorf. If those of us in the New York area who wait the normal amount of time that many of us wait, I'll talk about that next week, would have waited well over an hour. The Chassam Sofer was less machmir than most of us in his implementation of Rabbeinu Tam. So the net is, when you look at the sheet of the Rabbeinu Tam, the sheet of the Rabbeinu Tam has two fundamental issues. One is this incredible problem of how do you equate Hashecha, three stars, with the period of all the stars, which is the conceptual problem with Rabbeinu Tam. And then you have the issue of how do you relate Rabbeinu Tam to the sugya in Shabbos. So the poskim, the practical poskim, I would use the word disregard, they don't address the theoretical conceptual problem. They basically look at the Gemara end, and they use the Gemara in Shabbos as a mode of poskening, as opposed to the theoretical position of Rabbeinu Tam. You have conceptualists, the Rav, Rav David Shapiro, and there are others in the 20th century who try to rehabilitate the Rabbeinu Tam. The Rav basically answers the logical questions, the contradictions between the Gemara in Shabbos and the Gemara in Pesachim, but the Rav doesn't address how the Rabbeinu Tam is consistent with the Gemara in Shabbos. Rav David Shapiro, on the other hand, really doesn't solve the conceptual alignment of the sugya in Shabbos with the sugya in Pesachim. He does address the observational problem completely, because he basically says that Rabbeinu Tam roughly reads the sugya like the Gaonim. And then you have what I would call the traditionalists, who solve the issue of the equivalence between the two sugyas, but they don't address the problem of how this correlates with the sugya in Shabbos, and they add the additional issue of how this correlates with Alot HaShachar described in the sugya in Pesachim, and also described at great length in Maseches Tamid. So that's the Rabbeinu Tam, and basically, when you read the literature, I've tried to explain the Rav and Rav Shapiro, Rav Moshe, Rav Aaron Cutler in sort of pure in sort of archetypes. In reality, when you read Shuvos from many, many Gedol Yisrael over the years, almost all of them are some admixture of rejecting Rabbeinu Tam, maintaining Rabbeinu Tam traditionally, reconceptualizing Rabbeinu Tam, and really trying to paskin in a realistic way, fully aware that people, this is the Shulchan Aruch, and it's very difficult for many poskim to do what the Gra, to do what the Chazon Ish did, or the Balatanya, or Rav Kuczynski, and effectively disregard Rabbeinu Tam completely and disregard the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so that's the Rabbeinu Tam, probably the most interesting machlokas in the whole area of Zmanim. Next week, we're not going to do anything this involved. We're going to go morning to night through the 15 Zmanei Hayom that occur from Alot HaShachar until Seis Kol HaKochavim, and we will very quickly indicate some of the more interesting machlokas that come up among poskim relative to the various times during the halachic day. So So thank you, and we'll take questions if there are any. Okay, so Mel asks, who interprets Tachton and Elyon as referring to the ball of the sun? I believe you have stumped me. I believe it's Rav Druk in the 1930s. He wrote a sefer which I cannot get. It's out of print, but I believe I saw a reference to it, and I am assuming others did as well, but I believe that that notion is in Rav Druk's sefer. How long did it take for the opinion of the Gra and the Balatana? That's a very interesting question. It took a while. First of all, you have to understand that what they were overturning was not the end of Shabbos, because in Vilna, in the summer, 72 minutes is a kula for the end of Shabbos compared to what every one of us on this call probably keeps for Shabbos. In other words, we'll talk about next week what the various shitas, what we do in practice. So the issue for the Gra was to move people back from a half hour, 40 minutes. There's a very, very large argument as to how long after Shabbos the people actually work. But I'll give you some examples. The Chassam Sofer, writing in 1803, when he was still the Rav in Matisdorf, allowed a bris for a baby born, I believe, 27 minutes after sunset. The Derech HaChaim, writing, I believe, roughly the same time, said that the absolute cutoff for the end of for doing melacha, the Rabbanon, is 37, I think he said 37 minutes, I may be wrong, maybe 37 and a half minutes. So you have Gedolei Yisrael, the generation after the Gra and the Balatanya, and certainly in Poland, in Hungary, even in Germany and in Litva, the Gra and the Balatanya were probably almost universally accepted, probably by the middle of the 19th century. In certain Hasidic areas, until World War II. Many of you know that the great compromise between Rav Moshe Feinstein and the Satmar Rebbe was for the Satmar Hasidim to start Shabbos at sunset. And then the Satmar Hasidim in Hungary, people started Shabbos well after sunset up until the Second World War. I missed some questions. Let me go back. Okay, so now, the Sephardim traditionally, in the Middle East, except for a small number of people who emigrated back to the Middle East from Europe, nobody listened to Rabbeinu Tam. The big issue, which I won't comment on, is did Rabbi Yosef Karo change his mind when he went to live in Sfat? There's a huge argument, because in Sfat, nobody followed the Shita of the Rabbeinu Tam. The question is, what did Rabbi Yosef Karo do when he arrived? There are three or four isolated examples of poskim in the Middle East who followed the Rabbeinu Tam. The vast majority of communities in the Middle East followed some variant of the Gaoni. You can read, Rav Kapach will tell you what they did in Yemen. The Ben Ishchai will tell you about Baghdad. We have the history of Hebron, Sfat, Yerushalayim, Egypt, Morocco, Greece, all of those countries, all of their poskim, with very few exceptions, completely, they didn't know from the Rabbeinu Tam. It wouldn't have made sense to them. So, okay, David and Beit Shemesh. David, it's there are two ma'amarim. The Milchas Kohen rewrote his sefer on Zmanim. So it's in Mimer 1, Mimer 2. I will tell you exactly where. Basically, what he does, I would go to the second Mimer. The second is easier than the first, because obviously he wrote it afterwards, and he wrote it more succinctly. He also in there has a little bit more practical, he has some more practical Zmanim in the second Mimer. In the first Mimer, all he really does is he lines up all the reasons to agree with the Gaonim, who he refers to as brought down by Maram al-Shakar, and he doesn't refer obviously to Vilna Gaon, he refers to Maram al-Shakar and the Gaonim versus Rabbeinu Tam and the Shulchan Aruch, and he concludes Rabbeinu Tam. The reason he concludes Rabbeinu Tam, I didn't get into. I just stayed with the sugi and Shabbos. If you look throughout Shas, there are many, many other sugyos that imply that the day extends beyond Bein HaShemashos. So he went through literally every sugi and Shas that's relevant to this machlokas, and he basically said it's clear to him that the day must begin after, the day must extend past Bein HaShemashos. And he basically did not get fancy with this intermediate position conceptually, but practically he ended up with a position relatively similar to what I was describing. Shabbos does not start at sunset, but he had an ending in Amsterdam 48 to 66 minutes after. So next time when I start, I'll tell you exactly where in Minchas Kohen. I know the estimate, the time estimates are in chapter 7, but I don't remember. The chapters are very well organized. He has the kashas on one, the kashas on the other, the terutzim for one, the terutzim for the other, and then he tells you, given what he's just discussed, which he feels is more authoritative. He does this for this topic, and he does it for another topic, which we're not going to talk about, which is what we call the Machlokas, the Magen Avraham and the Gra. He calls the Machlokas the Trumas Hadeshin and the Levushim, and there, interestingly, he paskins against the Magen Avraham, his contemporary. He paskins like the Levush. So those are the two topics he discusses. Okay. Thank you all, and we'll see you all, unless there are other questions, next week, same time, same station.